Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch from the City of Champions. We talk every week about health, fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle in general. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. This morning we'll speak with Dr. Terry Walls. She's the author of the book, The Walls Protocol, How I Beat Progressive MS Using Paleo Principles and Functional Medicine.
Good morning, Lynn. Then Karen Carastia of Alpine Apothecary and Marcia Scoville of All Women Healthcare. They're going to talk to us about the role that stress plays in women's hormones.
All that and more. This is The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dr. Lisa Saturnino, and I'm excited to announce that the Intermountain Park City Bonanza Clinic will now be a full-time InstaCare. For your ongoing medical needs, you'll see our partners at the Intermountain Park City Clinic at Round Valley. For your fractures, lacerations, and urgent care needs, come by and see us at the Bonanza InstaCare, 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank, Frontier Branch in Park City, a proud supporter of KPCW. Our team can help you with all of your banking needs, from deposit accounts to business lending. We have one branch in Park City and two branches in Heber and Midway, Heber Valley Bank. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Well, Dr. Terry Walls' story of multiple sclerosis is no different than most. The years of clues and strange symptoms that finally, in retrospect, make sense. Once she was diagnosed, the doctor in her was compelled to find answers, a diagnosis, and a cure. But the patient in her was compelled to save her own life. As conventional medicine continued to fail her, the patient won, and she began to experiment on herself. What she discovered saved and completely changed her life. Since then, she's changed countless other lives as well. Dr. Terry Walls is the author of The Walls Protocol, How I Beat Progressive MS Using Paleo Principles and Functional Medicine. Dr. Terry Walls is joining us by phone. Good morning to you, and welcome to The Mountain Life.
Good morning. Very glad to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you, and it's interesting to me, first of all. I just want to say, I don't know how it varies from community to community or state to state, but I know so many people with MS and who are recently diagnosed with MS. What kind of statistics are there?
So, traditionally, we say there's about 400,000 people in the U.S. with MS. When you're diagnosed, 80% are diagnosed with relapsing remitting. When you get worse, that's called a relapse. When you get better, that's called a remission. Those will progress on to secondary progressive, where there's no longer any improvement, only steady decline. 10% are diagnosed with primary progressive and never have any improvement. They just go through a steady decline.
Pretty big numbers. And I know that all types of MS, depending on, well, not all types, but depending upon where the lesions are on your brain, it's very different for many different people. And that's why it must be difficult to come up with a protocol, which you have, Dr. Walls. And maybe just start with your own diagnosis and take us through what the symptoms were and how debilitating it was.
I was diagnosed in 2000 because I had some foot drop and weakness in my left leg. I had an MRI in my brain and spinal cord and many, many other tests over several weeks. Then I had a spinal tap. I had lesions on my neck, abnormal spinal fluid. And when they looked at my medical record, they saw that I had had problems of visual dimming 13 years earlier. I was told to take disease-modifying drugs. I went and got a second opinion from the internationally recognized Cleveland Clinic, and they said, yes, you have MS. You should take disease-modifying drugs. And so I began that. By 2003, my disease had transitioned to the progressive phase of the disease, where you get no more improvements, and that's called secondary progressive MS. I took mitoxantrone, a form of chemotherapy. I had a lot of side effects. Then I took Tysabri, another more potent immune suppressant that cost about $40,000 a year, but that was pulled from the market, and then I switched to Cellcept. And so in 2007, at my nadir, I was so weak I could sit up for maybe 10, 15 minutes in a standard chair. Otherwise, I had to be in a recliner or in bed because my torso muscles were that weak.
So, Dr. Walls, you found yourself in this condition, and that led you away from traditional medicine because you were still declining. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. So when I hit the wheelchair, that's when I decided to go back to reading the medical science myself. And I started reading the animal studies for mouse models of multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's dementia, Huntington's disease. And I saw that mitochondria were not working well in all of those diseases. So then I searched for papers about how to help the mitochondria. And I started adding vitamins and supplements to my regimen, and that slowed the speed of my decline. I was very, very grateful. But I was still declining. And so at 2007, I created this protocol in an effort to stop the decline. I had accepted that there'd never be any recovery. And so I was quite, my physicians were stunned. My family was stunned, and so was I. And it really felt quite miraculous, the level of improvement that happened and how quickly everything began to come back.
That's an amazing thing that everybody was surprised in what you were able to come to. But what also surprises me about what you just said is that it seems like all this research and data was out there that pointed you in the direction of the mitochondria with the mouse studies, and yet it hadn't been really compiled and brought into mainstream medicine in any way. Is that Am I mishearing you on that?
Absolutely true. Studies in mice, the knowledge you get there, usually takes about 50 years to get into a clinical practice. And so my decision to read the mouse studies was that I wanted to see what people were going to be doing in 30 to 50 years. And that's where I thought my best hope lied.
And is that something that, as a physician, you're able to do? I mean, you had the background and the knowledge, and you knew that what the procedure was and the process and the protocol for bringing something into mainstream, and you were able to sort of leapfrog that using yourself as the case study.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's important for people to realize I had accepted that there was no recovery. So I did everything that I did hoping to just stay flat. But of course, we now know that I didn't stay flat. I had this dramatic recovery, and it really changed how I see disease and health. It changed the clinical practice that I do, and it changed the focus of my clinical research.
So where are you now in terms of your health, what you can perform? You say you're no longer in decline, but what symptoms are lingering?
I continue to steadily improve. I can bike comfortably. I go biking with my family. I'm walking on a treadmill. Just last week, I did my 20-minute walk. I'm at 3.5 miles an hour for the first 10 minutes, 4 miles an hour for the second 10 minutes, and then I'm alternating between walking and jogging. That's how much improved I've made. I still can't jog for 20 minutes, but now I begin to see that I think that will likely be achievable.
And so this is 14 years after you were first diagnosed. Is that right?
Correct.
Dr. Walls, let's talk about the role of mitochondria. And for those of us who have forgotten from Biology 101 what mitochondria is and the importance of cellular health, can you take us through a quick lesson on that?
So we're all alive because of chemistry. When the chemistry stops, we're dead. When the chemistry happens incorrectly, molecules get made with the wrong shape, and ultimately that will lead to sick cells, sick organs, sick humans. Mitochondria are how our cells generate and process energy. In the really ancient bacteria that got into our ancestors 1.5 billion years ago, our brain, our retina, and our heart have the most mitochondria per cell. And clinically, if you're suffering from fatigue, brain fog or declining endurance because you have less effective heart pumping, that's a terrific indication that your mitochondria are likely starved, not working very well, and would do well to get a big Walls tune-up.
So how do we feed our mitochondria?
So my protocol really is designed to improve the health of the mitochondria and the health of the cell. So and here's the big picture on the diet. It's 9 cups of fruits and vegetables divided between leafy greens, sulfur-rich vegetables in the cabbage, onion, mushroom family, and deeply colored things like peppers, tomatoes, beets, berries, high-quality protein, animal meats, organ meats, and seaweed. And then I exclude foods that are likely causing worsening inflammation and are probably relatively toxic to the cells. And that would be the gluten grains, dairy proteins, and egg. I have a longer conversation about why I'd exclude them in the book.
No, it's interesting. We talk so much on the show about anti-inflammatory diets and things like that. A lot of times, red meat is counted as inflammatory. So what's your argument on that?
For 2.5 million years, our ancestors were eating meat. I don't think meat is the problem, although I do have a conversation about factory-farmed meat that has more toxins in it and will be less health-promoting. The real inflammatory problem is a high sugar white flour, high glycemic load diet. That is extremely inflammatory, extremely damaging.
And so along with this, with the paleo principles, there's also some discussion. Some of the diets include grains and others don't.
So I have made 3 diets, the Walls diet, the Walls Paleo, and then the more advanced, the Walls Paleo Plus, which is a ketogenic diet. At the Walls diet, people can have non-gluten grains, but they can't. I limit that to just 1 serving a day. When they go to the Walls Paleo, it stresses more animal proteins, organ meats, seaweeds, fermented foods, and restricts the legumes and grains to just 2 servings a week. And then in the Paleo Plus, we're reducing carbohydrates further, increasing fat, and we're shifting the fuel that we burn from carbohydrate-based to fat-based while putting people in ketosis. And I have a long conversation about how ketones are terrific fuel for the brain and initiate a lot of healing in the brain. So it's a terrific protocol for those particularly worried about their brain.
Interesting. If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Terry Walls. She's the author of The Walls Protocol, How I Beat Progressive MS Using Paleo Principles and Functional Medicine. I just want to point out on the back cover of your book, Dr. Walls, there are 2 photos of you. One, you're in a wheelchair, and the next, you're straddling your bicycle, looking very happy.
And there's just 1 year difference between those 2.
Wow.
And Dr. Walls, I know in the book you talk extensively about getting the nutrients for the mitochondria and all the various proteins and enzymes that are part of the chemistry of the body through whole foods. But and you don't you tried supplements and you found that helped, but it wasn't really where you wanted to be. But let's say for somebody who wants a start, isn't a supplement vitamin program that has things like, Q10 in it and some of these really critical elements, a good starting point? I mean, wouldn't it create a foundation for somebody to begin or lay the foundation?
That comes in really shows us that if you don't change the diet, supplements themselves tend to be not very helpful. And most of the studies that have looked at adding a particular vitamin have found it really doesn't change the desired health outcomes. And sometimes it makes things worse. And that really is because our nutrition has to do with ratios between the vitamins, the minerals, and the various nutrients. And so if we get our nutrients from food with very thoughtful supplementation that's going to be monitored, that's that's where the magic happens. If you don't change your diet, you just add supplements, do not expect a big change.
Well, that's a little bit disappointing for those of us who take vitamins. I've always felt that my vitamin protocol really helped.
Vitamins are helpful when you've really changed your diet and you've ramped up your nutrition. But for much of the public, they think, I'll just take some vitamins, I'll keep eating a high sugar, high carbohydrate-based diet. They will not see much benefit.
I see. So they're using it as the cure, and it's not. It's just part of a process, which is a much bigger picture of the totality of the diet and things of that nature.
Yes. You know, supplements, in a very thoughtful way, can be helpful as an addition. But instead, doing the supplements instead of changing your diet will be a very minimal benefit.
I see. Now, there's something else I wanted to ask you about. A common theme that we have on the show is we talk about smoothies, and I know that you pointed out smoothies as a positive thing, and I use a smoothie every morning, and I was thrilled to hear about this, but I feel that I lay the foundation with my spinach smoothie. I know you're a big proponent of kale, but it's kind of along the same lines. A lot of fruit, a lot of green leafy vegetables in this smoothie, a lot of fiber. It doesn't get ground up that much. And I feel that, as you point out, it starts the day and lays a very important foundation, and then you can layer on other sorts of foods on top of that.
It's a terrific way to start the day, and I've been doing that now since, 2008. I have a smoothie in the morning, often with greens, and I like to rotate the greens. As fond as I am of kale, I don't have kale every day, so I'll have kale, spinach, and then I'll have dandelion greens. So I rotate my food so I don't have the same food. But a big smoothie in the morning, a source of protein, usually leftover meat from the night before, and that's my morning.
And in your smoothie, you talk about three heaping plates of leafy greens a day. How much of that portion of your three plates do you get into your smoothie, just out of curiosity?
So it's three plates of vegetables overall for the day. Yeah, and I probably get one plate full's worth of vegetables and berries in my morning smoothie.
That's
plus, I would say, 3 to 4 ounces of meat. And that's my very typical breakfast.
That's an amazing thing, thinking about trying to get three plates of vegetables, one of them occurring in the smoothie, because now that I'm doing the smoothie every day, which I've done for a year straight now, I have to say, and it's been quite amazing, one of the things it made me realize was how little vegetable and fruit I ate when I thought I was a vegetable and fruit consumer. And it turns out once you start buying it for your smoothie every day, I realized I was not. And then to think that I'm only purchasing one-third of what I would need, that's really kind of shocking.
You know, in our clinical trial, people keep food diaries, so we know what they're eating, and then we have them chart how well they're hitting the targets for our various food groups. That really helps them change their dietary habits and be successful with implementing the WALS protocol. In my clinical practice, again, we talk about food diaries and recording how you're doing and hitting the targeted food groups. It's very helpful when people are changing their eating plans to do something like that.
Dr. Walls, wanted to head back in to talk about meat. We're starting to hear that saturated fats may not be as bad as we have been hearing all of these decades.
Sure.
What's your take on that?
So all of our cells are wrapped in a cell membrane. And there's a very specific ratio of saturated fat, cholesterol, omega-3 fat, and omega-6 fat in that cell membrane. And so to have healthy cells, we have to have healthy cell membranes, which means we do need to have saturated fat, cholesterol, and the omega-3 and omega-6 fats in our diets. When we don't, that damages our cells. So I couldn't agree more. We need animal proteins, we need saturated fats for the optimal health of our cell membrane, which means we need it for the optimal health of our cells if we want our chemistry in our cells and body to be functioning well.
Huh, that's very interesting. Dr. Wells, before we let you go, no doubt now this is your specialization, but before you got into all of this, what was your specialization in medicine?
So I'm an internal medicine doc at an academic center, so we're teaching residents and taking care of things like diabetes, heart disease, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, mental health issues. And I used to think that you use the latest, newest drugs and the latest surgical procedures, and all this complementary alternative medicine, integrative medicine, it was sort of a waste of time and a waste of money. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I've changed my thinking on all of that, and I realize that the keys to health lie in diet and lifestyle choices.
That's right. Well, Dr. Terry Walls, we thank you so much for joining us today. Again, the book is The Walls Protocol. There's also a great TED Talk that you give that kind of sums this all up. And then do you have a website?
Yes, Terry, T-E-R-Y, Walls, W-A-H-L-S.com. Your listeners should go there and download the free materials that we talked about in the book. And we have lots of videos, including the TED Talk video, to help people get started.
Sounds great. Dr. Walls, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And that again was Dr. Terry Walls, The Walls Protocol, W-A-H-L-S. And I can think of about a half a dozen people that I know in this town that this would be worth passing off to. So this is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back with Karen Karastia of Alpine Apothecary, along with Marcia Scoville. She's an expert in women's hormones. We'll talk about the effects of stress on hormones. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hey, Dave, when is the best time for a story?
Sunday mornings at 8:30.
Hi, this is Kathy.
And I'm Dave. We're co-hosts of The Story Mine. Tune in Sunday mornings right here at KPCW.
Experience the treasures of storytelling every Sunday morning at 8:30.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts from Park City Medical Center, a nonprofit community hospital and part of the Intermountain Healthcare System. Park City Medical Center is proud to be consistently recognized as having some of the most engaged employees in the country. Little wonder, considering we offer all employees a pension plan, 401k, excellent insurance, and of course, year-round employment. We are currently recruiting nurses, registrars, housekeepers, kitchen staff, and more. Visit parkcitymedicalcenter.org to find your dream job.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with my co-host Tim Henney. Just wanted to mention a couple things about the event that happened at the Park City Mark on Monday evening. A 24-year-old boy, we've reported in the news, a 24-year-old man, I should say, probably was saved by the quick response of staff and some patrons at the mark. One of the things was that throughout the mark, there are three AEDs, which are automated external defibrillators. The location of those, the quick location of those, apparently there was one that was about 15 feet away from where the young man had collapsed without a pulse. The staff jumped to action, got the defibrillator out, and kept him going until emergency responders arrived. And I was speaking with City Manager Diane Foster just this morning, and in my mind, I don't know about our listeners.
The paddles,
exactly, like on the movies. Yeah, clear, and it'll shock you if you're anywhere. Well, that's not what it is. The automated external defibrillators are just these little pads that are put on, and if there's anything nearby or touching that has a pulse, it won't shock.
the young man had no pulse, so it shocked and kept him going. So I found that to be very interesting, and that's a citywide initiative to get a lot of people throughout the city trained. So interesting on that, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is Eric Karshner, Assistant General Manager of Park Meadows Country Club, supporting KPCW. Park Meadows Country Club offers its members weekly ski groups, a private cross-country skiing course, and social events. Golf, social, and dining memberships are available. 649-2460 or parkmeadowscc.com.
Experience the ride of a lifetime on the Comet Bobsled Ride and Rocket Skeleton Ride at the Utah Olympic Park. Take a thrilling ride down the entire length of the 2002 Olympic track, ripping through 15 turns and reaching speeds up to 80 miles per hour on the Winter Comet Bobsled Ride. The Rocket Skeleton Ride offers the solo adventure of shooting headfirst down the last five turns of the track. Reservations required. Details and restrictions are available online at UtahOlympicLegacy.com. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Weir Peak here with Tim Henney, and just want to ask you if you're going to get training on the automated external defibrillator.
Apparently I am.
Apparently you are, yes. I think I will too. I think it's fantastic. I'm also surprised that I knew nothing about it. We want to welcome Karen Carastia from Alpine Apothecary into the studio. Karen is hosting Marcia Scoville, who's an expert on women's hormones, tomorrow night in
Actually,
the Jess Reed building.
It's just one floor below, yes, in the conference room.
Well, stress is one of the main reasons that women approaching menopause have low progesterone and high cortisol. The stress hormone accounts for a reduction of both estrogen and progesterone. Low sex hormones are also linked to the prevalence of stress in women younger than 40. Infertility may occur because the combination of cortisol and additional stressors make your ovaries slow down and not ovulate. Well, joining us to talk about the world of women's hormones is Marcia Scoville. She'll be holding that talk tomorrow evening at Alpine Apothecary from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And along with her, Karen Carastia. So good morning to you, Marcia.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us. I know you have come up to Park City on several occasions to give talks, and you work somewhat in concert with Karen, which is why we brought her in today. You look at women's hormones and maybe administer some of the protocols for testing where you are, and then Karen supplies the hormones. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, that's right. It's really a wonderful thing that there's a very good compounding pharmacist in Park City, and it's Karen.
Yeah, yes, it is. Okay. So first of all, maybe just want to ask you what you do with when a woman comes to you and says, things just aren't right. And I know it sounds just like that. They say, I don't know. I'm tired. I'm cranky. I'm not myself. I'm about 45. What's the first thing you do?
Well, the first thing we do is talk a lot about the symptoms, the things she's concerned about. A lot about what's happened to her in the past, sort of what's going on in her life currently. We spend about an hour finding out as much as we can about the person who's here to see us for help.
Okay. And so that would be sort of an evaluation of probably how much stress they have in their lives, what their schedule is like, and that sort of thing.
Right, yeah. And it's very important for that context to be well understood because hormones, when they come back, everybody has a different problem going on, and you can have similar hormone levels and different symptoms depending on the context with the woman. So,
So no standard. That doesn't sound right. Yeah, and it doesn't sound easy either. And I'll just tell you my own experience, and I was going to ask Karen about this. So I went into Karen one day and said, something's not right. I feel tired and cranky, and I'm about 45. And I said, I'd like to get a test to test my hormones, you know, estrogen, progesterone. And Karen looked at me and she said, you don't need a test for that. You need to test your stress hormones. So, Karen, why did you say that to me?
Well, the adrenal glands are kind of an underlying system, basically. And it's widely thought that it's very difficult to balance hormones, especially for a perimenopausal woman, if the adrenal glands are not functioning properly. So if we have a person who we know has a busy lifestyle, is very active, is involved in numerous things, it's really a good idea to start with adrenal function, cortisol levels, and so forth, and work on getting that normalized, and then from there, moving on to hormones as well.
So, Karen or Marcia, are hormones easily and readily measurable?
Yeah, they are, well, easily. Nothing's easy about women and hormones, but yes, there are several ways to measure hormones. And those methods of measuring them are readily available.
And so, we just had a previous guest on talking about diet and mitochondria and mm-hmm. the chemistry of the body, and it seems to me that hormones, from my naive perspective, play a significant role for men and women in the chemistry of the body. But yet, you can measure hormones and see which ones are deficient, which ones maybe are high, and balance them out. And do you ever look at diet and things of that nature to accomplish that, or do you always add and subtract an actual hormone to the process?
Well, what Karen said about cortisol and stress is certainly true, and what you are saying about diet is absolutely true. We spend a good part of that hour with the woman at her first visit, analyzing how she's eating, because, gosh, you know, the only way the body gets those biochemicals it needs to function is through what we're eating. So we do spend quite a bit of time talking about that.
Okay, and that leads me to the question of, you know, all things being equal, it would be wonderful if, I mean, I know I can change my diet, that's doable. How much can I feasibly change my lifestyle? I can't quit my job or my other responsibilities. So at the end of the day, and I have to say the hormone test that I took was so hard because you couldn't have coffee. And you were supposed to take a day that you didn't have a lot of stress. And I'm thinking, well, it's just not realistic. I mean, my life, everyone's life has certain stressors in it that you can't eliminate. I mean, we don't all sit around cross-legged meditating all day, right?
that's certainly true. And I think that's one of the most difficult aspects of trying to help women feel better. The laboratory that I use it gives us a report of not only the numbers of the hormones, but how the symptoms relate to those numbers and can categorize the symptoms into various general causes. And women will come in and we'll have this discussion about their results. We spend probably most of the time they're there for that follow-up discussion, talking about their stressors, because inevitably that's a big part of why women don't feel well. And in that context, I have a simplified system to try to help them take this large, I'm stressed out cloud and turn it into doable pieces. You know, there are always things in our lives that are really small that stress us quite a bit, and if you have quite a few of those, the cumulative effect is you can't cope with the bigger stressors. So we have a system for helping people take big stressors and try to break them down also into smaller parts they can make some adjustments with.
So, Marcia, is that kind of like life coaching? I mean, you almost sound like a therapist now. You're dealing with, you know, as Lynn says, people's lifestyles and how you move through life and how you view things. And if you come from as one of optimism or pessimism or fear or joy or pleasure, all those sort of things will affect how you view the daily events in life as either stressful or an opportunity.
That's certainly true. And inevitably, I think anyone who takes the time to listen to every individual woman's concerns ends up doing a small amount of life coaching or helping them get better in ways that perhaps don't seem to be as directly related to hormones, but always will be because of the effects of cortisol in the body. Yeah, I guess in a way I do more counseling than I used to do when I was delivering babies, I guess.
But I think that's part of integrative medicine, is helping patients to find their own tools that will work best for them maybe they can look at their life and they can look at certain stressors, which are critical, which are not going to go away, and which they can get rid of. And doing things like yoga or meditation or taking time to decompress and making sure that they're sleeping well. There are so many things that people can do. It certainly shouldn't be there's this connotation that stress is around and it's inevitable and we're all doomed. We need to create hope, and I think Marcia does a great job of that in pointing out different things that women can do to change their life for the better.
Okay. So Karen, how much of that do you do in your practice? I mean, do you get into the sort of life coaching aspect and the therapy of how to decompress and what decompression looks like, and people who don't feel that they have that potential or that opportunity, helping them acknowledge that, in fact, they can create a place for decompression?
I hope that I am an emphasizing role in that,
right,
and kind of driving it home even further, because I think the more people hear that from different people, the more they'll believe it. And there are definitely things that we can do supplement-wise to help with sleep, to help kind of bring down that wall of cortisol and just help the mind to relax.
Well, I was going to ask you that. That's a good segue. So how do you couple this life coaching and therapeutic aspect of decompression with your apothecary practice? How do you bring that other side of it in? And is that functional medicine, or what did you call it a second?
Integrative medicine. You're looking at the total body as to what's going on. And I agree with Dr. Walls. I think that it's not all about supplements, but sometimes people are in a hole, and it's hard to do the right things when you're not feeling well. So it's nice to know that there are some very good tools in the form of supplements and actually helping to normalize hormones as well to make people feel better, so that then they can start making the lifestyle choices, and then they're on the road and they most likely don't need the supplements long term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the hormones potentially, but it's an individual thing.
It's interesting that this word supplement has not sort of been broken into several different categories. You said there are tools and there are supplements. And I think, as Dr. Walls was talking about, you know, some people think that they can take supplements in exchange for healthy lifestyle. Some of the tools you're talking about for sleep, for example, it's I know you've told me this before. I know melatonin is probably one of them. And what are some of the other tools?
There are things like theanine, which is actually in green tea. It's one of the catechins that is very calming. So if you're looking for something during the day to be calming, that's where green tea gets its benefits. Theanine phosphatidylserine is another one. There are herbs that are adaptogens that help the adrenal gland to adapt to different situations, ashwagandha, Siberian ginseng. So there's really kind of a host, and there are a lot of different remedies that can be used to address specific levels and so forth.
I've always thought that green tea was somewhat, it has not caffeine, but some component of caffeine in it, so it's more of a stimulant.
It does have caffeine, but very low levels compared to coffee.
Okay, so it can be calming.
Can somebody come into your apothecary shop and talk to you about various things that are going on with them, and you give them herbal recommendations or ways to, you know, bring them out of that hole? I mean, can they just come and have a conversation with you, or do they have to have a prescription from a doctor, do they have to have done that step with a doctor?
No, they're very welcome to stop by, but a lot of times I tend to be kind of a person who can then direct them to someone like Marcia, who can provide the more in-depth help, because it's really not just about one or two supplements potentially. There's so much more to it that it is better to involve a practitioner who can address all of those things.
Okay. Marcia, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background. Now, you're also a nurse midwife. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And do you practice midwifery anymore?
You know, in 2004, after 18 years of being up all night and on call all the time, some of the moms I had originally delivered babies for when I first started were getting into the perimenopause, and they would come into my office. And at that time, you know, there wasn't a lot discussed in my sort of medical environment about hormones. But I began to think, you know, these are women I've known a long time, and why do they suddenly need sleeping pills and antidepressants and anxiety medications? And so it was clear to me it had to be hormonal. So I began digging into the hormones and found that it was almost as satisfying, maybe more, to help women during this phase of their life when they, you know, have children at home and are having trouble making their lives feel comfortable because their hormones have become changed as they've grown older.
Oh, that's interesting. And I believe you were one of the midwives in the group at Birth Care Health Care when I had my baby there 20 years ago.
There you go.
Yeah, so I guess that means, guess what age I'm at right now?
Exactly.
Time to make an appointment. Okay. So, you know, it's always confusing to me, maybe because I haven't quite gotten here, but I remember my mom when she was at this point in her life having the estrogen patch. Marcia, maybe you could talk about where we've come from since then and why.
Wow. You know, as difficult as it has been to help women with hormones during a 14-year period where everything they hear about them is negative, that one very large study called the Women's Health Initiative at least got people very interested in hormones all of a sudden, for good or ill. And women found, when they were being advised to stop their hormones immediately, that their lives became so miserable that they began looking for other options. And that's one of the reasons why isomolecular or bioidentical hormones have grown in popularity, because women were looking for a way to feel good again. So I've been doing this, you know, since about 2002. And during that time, so many people have been focusing on hormones that we know a whole lot more about them now than we did then. And that's been a wonderful journey to find out. For instance, estrogen does more than, well, about 400 things in the body. And we tend to think of it in the context of hot flashes. So, you know, that amount of information has evolved through research just during the short time, you know, 10 years or I guess at this point, you know, 12 years that I've been really interested in the hormones. So now that we understand the breadth of what they do, it becomes even more important for women to understand how I'm going to age. I'd like to have my brain work. I'd like to have some energy. I would like personality to be as it has been and not a whole new person I don't like so much. So I've really been, I guess it was a fortunate thing to start getting interested just as the information was increasing.
Marcia and Karen, either one of you could help me with this. Do we consider these fluctuations or depletion of hormones, this change that occurs throughout life and responds to different environmental factors in different ways, is it an illness when things change that way? Or is it just, you know, part of a process of aging?
Interesting question. A lot of women ask me about that, and it usually comes up in the context of, well, do I need to take these the rest of my life? And that's sort of a philosophical question, I guess, in a lot of ways. We did not, in the past, have the opportunity to do anything about the changes that occurred as with age. You know, Premarin, which has been around since late 50s, was the first attempt that we've made in modern times to have women be able to replace hormones that they were losing. I read an interesting article about how rich Egyptian women drink the urine of pregnant women, and because it's very rich in hormones. And that's interesting that women that long ago were noticing changes in how they were functioning and looking for some way to have it get better. So, you know, it's not an illness. It's a process. But I think it's a process that can be supported, can be made less uncomfortable. For me, that matters the most, the reason I take hormones at this point, is the effects they have on the brain. Because if we're going to live a long time, I certainly don't want to spend the last 10 years not even knowing I am around or who these people are that are around me. So I think there are a lot of things about hormones that help us build a life as we age that's comfortable for us and makes us glad we're still around.
Well, and Marcia, that that kind of leads me into my next question about this process, which is over time, again, this kind of gets back to that paleo diet and, you know, back in the beginning when people were foraging and collecting and hunting and gathering, they were eating differently and they probably had a different foundation that supported the process of hormone change and aging in a different way. Is there any way or any research or data that kind of links where we were and where we are and maybe the changes in and the depletion in that foundation through our not only lifestyles but also diets?
I think there are a lot of things out there. They generally, because we have a specialized approach to medicine, there are not a lot of articles that put it all together, but certainly one of the things I know has changed since those times is the way stress presents itself in our lives and the unremitting nature of our stress versus the kind of stress that used to present itself back in the paleo ages. So I think that's a big change. And I think, obviously, refined foods and preservatives and all of those chemicals that have worked their way into our life are a new complication. I think that those people probably would have benefited from a wider array of nutrients that they couldn't get because they were sort of tied to a local source. They could grow what they could hunt. So I, you know, don't long for turning back to those days, but I certainly think people better if they focus on, you know, vegetables, a wide array of those, quality proteins, using fruit for treats and keeping their carbs low and making them as whole grain and as non-processed as possible. So yeah, I think it's out there. I think you would just all of us would have trouble coordinating all of the information that would talk about the difference between living back then and living now. I talk about the difference between living as late as 1930 and living now, because 1930 was when cars became more or less widely available, and ever since then, nobody walks anywhere anymore, and that's made a huge change. So mm-hmm. you don't have to go all the way back in history to see how the changes affect us.
And Marcia, Lynn has allowed me one final question, and that, and I have to ask this, but here we are talking about women's hormones. What about men's hormones? Men have hormones that are changing through the aging process as well. And I know you're coming up here for a workshop that is your audience, your target audience is women and stress, but what about men and stress and hormones?
You know, I think men have sometimes different reactions to stress than women. They're very different from women. I just don't ever take care of men, but women ask me about their husbands, and so I find people who are very good at taking care of men.
What are the symptoms? Sitting on the couch, watching football, drinking beer, and eating pizza? Is that it?
That may be the cause. Yeah. I think it's men also, if they find themselves, you know, losing interest, losing confidence, I think there's a real link between changes in mood and what's going on with their hormones. So I have wives who notice, and mm-hmm. they ask about their husbands. So definitely changes are happening. So I just try to keep handy great referrals that I can make to people who take care of men.
Well, that's interesting. Who do you refer men to?
I generally tell them to call the compounding pharmacist closest to where they live, because compounding pharmacists know who does good work.
Yes.
You know, who prescribes appropriately, who takes care of their patients well. So they're one of the best places to find a referral for someone who needs to have help with their hormones.
Right. And Karen Carastia would be that person. And of course, mm-hmm. our listeners don't know that she quietly slipped out. She had an appointment at 10. So mm-hmm. she actually has been on our show before and talked about menopause. Mm-hmm. And I think that among men, and I'm hearing this more, I don't know, maybe it's my peer group and the age, that testosterone levels in men are, you know, pretty widespread. They're low. They're lower than men would think, and they think that it's cheating to take, you know, testosterone as a hormone supplement, but in many cases, they need to. So that's one thing that Karen has talked to us about before. So it's interesting. So your talk will be held at the Jess Reed Building, where Alpine Apothecary is, downstairs tomorrow night, again from 6:30 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
And the talk is free. And you'll be talking about all these same subjects. Will you be addressing any? I know the sex, not the sex hormones, the stress hormones affect, well, just that, sex and fertility as well. So do you address those women who are still, you know, maybe under 40? Is this something that would be enveloped in your talk?
You know, it's from the time a woman hits her mid-30s, generally speaking, because, you know, those little eggs are the same age we are. The eggs are not as enthused about ovulating, and so there will be cycles without ovulation, which inevitably causes hormone imbalance. And so, you know, women in their mid-30s, you know, sometimes do have problems with hormones, but they don't think they're supposed to. So they don't do anything or find out much about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, women in that age group certainly can have similar problems, and especially since we're focusing on stress. Stress has an impact on hormones, and that's one of the reasons why we talk about stress and its impacts. Because, you know, what we mostly do with stress in our lives is we rename it as, well, this is my life.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
It's one reason why nobody thinks there's anything they can do about it.
Oh, that's good. I'm obviously guilty of that since I've admitted that in this hour. Okay. Well, Marcia Scoville, thank you so much for joining us today. And you've been a wealth of information, and you always are, to this community. So thanks, and hope to see you tomorrow night.
Thanks for inviting me.
And that was Marcia Scoville, again, MS, and she's an expert in women's hormones. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
We want to thank our guest today, Dr. Terry Walls with the Walls Protocol, and that's all about MS using paleo principles and functional medicine. Also, Marcia Scoville and Karen Karastia of Alpine Apothecary. I also want to thank our underwriters.
Grand Valley Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, Park City Clinic, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Prudential Utah Real Estate, San Francisco Design, and Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa.
Very good. And one more thing I wanted to mention is we spoke with Dr. Sarah Gottfried. She is the author of The Hormone Cure, Reclaim Balance, Sleep, Sex Drive, and Vitality Naturally with the Gottfried Protocol. She was someone we talked to about women's hormones, I don't know, a year and a half ago. But this is, for any of you listening, this is a wonderful book. I keep it on my bedside table.
And it reduces your stress and puts you to sleep at night.
It does, exactly. Just a paragraph. No, it is actually a very readable book. I just have a difficulty staying awake at night. So I guess that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. Well, tune in tomorrow to Cool Science Radio. We'll talk with a team of lady robotics competitors. They are headed to a national competition at Legoland in California, of course. They won the regional competition here. It's a group of seventh graders, delightful young ladies headed towards all kinds of great careers in engineering and software design. We'll also speak with a doctor on depression, some new discoveries. You're listening to KPCW Park City.